Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast, sponsored by Moda Fabrics. I'm editor Lindsay Fullington, and I'll be hosting this week's special editor's podcast. And we're going to be chatting a lot about everything from holiday gifts to storage ideas, and even give you a sneak peek at our February 2015 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting. So I'm here with editors Elizabeth Beasy and Jody Sanders right now, and we're going to kick off this podcast talking about holiday gifts, handmade decor, and just how to jumpstart this Christmas craft season. So let's talk a little bit about, I mean, we've been chatting on staff a lot about what we're making this year for presents. So let's talk about what we're doing.
I think one of my favorite things to do is make handmade gifts for my friends and family, because I know they're not going to get anything just like it. And I have, in the past, I've seemed to gravitated toward finding one thing that I can make multiples of. So one year I learned how to knit, and so I made knit scarves for everybody, from my six-year-old niece to the 94-year-old grandma. Everybody got a scarf, but I tried to personalize it by making it in their color, maybe, that they would like, or a little fluffier for the younger ones. And that was really fun. One year I learned how to make jewelry, and so I made beaded bracelets for everybody. So it's kind of fun to find that one item that you can either assembly line or make multiples of, because I think when we're in the rush of the holiday, sometimes we get so caught up in having everything be so different that it just takes so long to make everything, and then you're frustrated because you can't get it done.
Right. Exactly. And then you lose, like, all the fun and the Christmas spirit that is that is the holiday. So yeah, I think you're like tons of our readers, and like
I mean,
I love to do the one thing, and then I do it for everybody. Especially coworkers. Hello, you guys. It's such a good idea. I mean, and Jody, you were talking about jewelry, and So I think, as many of you know, we are all makers of all things. We all love to quilt, but we also make, I think we make like everything. So one reason I love making jewelry is that people who don't make jewelry think it is so hard, and it's actually not. So it's something fun to give that people are like, oh my gosh, you made this for me? Yep. Took 2 seconds, but I don't tell them that.
Yeah, so.
No. And it's not necessarily even crafty things, although we have knitters and crocheters and quilters and weavers and jewelry makers and crafters of all kind. It's also, I think, even in the cooking realm. You know, we have a lot of people that like to do baking and cooking. And in fact, editor Jill Mead, she always likes to give banana nut bread to her family members and friends. It's a special recipe that from her aunt, and so that also has special meaning. And I think at the holiday times, we kind of revert back to some of those recipes that we love and the traditions that we love. So it's not only necessarily the crafting area, but it's also in the cooking area. I think that we like to give those cookies, tins of cookies or banana nut bread or something like that.
Exactly. And one thing, actually, I love that Elizabeth Stumbo makes, art director for Quilt Some More, she makes gumdrop bread. And she's talked about this before, but never brought it in. So apparently it's a bread that when you slice into it, you can see these red and green gumdrops in. And in my head, it's like a variation of, like, fruitcake, which I don't have. Well, I have good memories of that from my great-grandma, but I know a lot of people don't. But she swears it's awesome and tastes good. So I'm going to make her bring it in.
And our art director, Nancy Wiles, she often talks about her grandmother, who was Scottish, and she has very fond memories of her shortbread recipe that she always used to make for Nancy when Nancy was young. And so, again, that's a recipe that Nancy's incorporated into her life now, and she likes to give the shortbread cookies to her friends and family at the holiday
time.
Which
is so fun. And you could even include the cookies or the bread with, you know, the of recipe. I mean, give them the recipe too, and that's a way to craft it up. Or
and then wrap it up a tea towel that, gee, you've gotten a cute idea from the December issue of American Patchwork and Quilting. We've got just a little idea of how to embellish a tea towel with those little 2.5-inch squares that pre-cut squares that we all love. So that's what I love, because again, it's not just here, I wrapped it in a store-bought tin. Wrapped it in the tin, but then I wrapped that in this towel that I made.
And that's one of those things, like, especially, I mean, both Quilts and More Winter Issue, which is on sale now, and American Patchwork and Quilting December, both have really great quick gift ideas that even if you don't necessarily have everyone's wish list yet and you don't know what you're getting people, just making some of those in advance, like a wine wrap or some coasters, just doing that stuff in advance is really great hostess gifts. If you're invited to a last minute party and you need to bring something, or just, you know, if teacher gifts, just cute wrapping stuff, and stocking up on some of those like earlier in the season is a perfect way to, you know, get some of those maybe unexpected people that you forgot about on your wish list, just have something ready for them.
Yeah, early in the season, that's always my goal.
Yes, goal.
It's always my goal to start in September, and, you know, by the time I get to November and, or even December, and it's really crazy, and I have all those gifts made, and I don't know, for some reason, I just never get on top of it. I think I'm enjoying the fall weather so much that I don't want to be inside and making things, but always the goal.
But one thing I'm going to do this year, well, I do every year. We have a family crafting day, and it's always, we call it Craft Saturday, and it's the Saturday after Thanksgiving. But I've decided, rather than just making ornaments and stuff this year, I'm like, why am I not making the gifts that I'm giving to people for Christmas this year? So, coworkers, all of your gifts will be made at Craft Saturday. And maybe don't listen to this, but I'm so making all of the, there are adorable little tape measures. Those little plastic retractable tape measures that, did Sherry Falls?
Yes.
Sherry Falls of this and that. She covered with fabric, and they're so cute.
Yes, with fabric, and there's like three different options. So depending on how complicated you want to make it, there's an option with just fabric, so you can fussy cut a cute little flower and put that covering your tape measure cover, and then she uses some rickrack to cover up those rough edges. There's also a version with like a little cherry on it, so it's a couple of little red circles with a little leaf, and then there's a version that's made of wool, which is really fun too, and that has three little flowers and some leaves on it. So you really have some options there as far as how you would like to decorate your tape measure covers, but it's such a cute way, and again, you could personalize it depending on who you're giving it to.
See, yeah, you guys know you're going to get it, but you don't know what it's going to look like.
No.
So.
And that pattern is in Quilts and More Winter, so if that sounds something like you'd want to make, just pick up that issue. And I think that's a great tip too, because this is how I give presents, is embellishing something store-bought, because then I don't have to go through all of the work of making something totally handmade and spending a lot of time. So my go-to gift is always like a store-bought cute mug, and I fill it with a little hot chocolate, and then I just make coasters. So I'm hand-making something that goes along with something I picked up at the store quick. And I mean, you can use your favorite Christmas fabrics for coasters, and they're so easy to whip up, and I can spend one Saturday making a bunch and dividing them between the amount of presents I need to give out. And it's an easy way to give something handmade but not feel overwhelmed.
And then, but you still could also, again, pick the perfect fabric for that person, or like, I know they like sparkly holiday fabric, or I know these people like more of a country look. Or
right. And you know, the fun thing about that is you actually can make them reversible. So you could put one fabric on one side and make it a holiday motif, and then flip it over on the other side, and it could be a 4th of July motif, or it could be a spring motif. So that's the fun thing about that. You could make them reversible, and one side had one motif and the other another.
Fun.
So how early do you guys start crafting for Christmas? Is that a laughable question?
Well, it kind of is. Actually, sometimes I'm so excited by the holiday season and I never want it to end that I'm actually making some stuff in January. And, well, because, like, I leave my Christmas decorations up way too long. So, so while I'm still in that mood, I'm still in the crafting holiday mood. So I do make some things really early, but then it's usually, again, it doesn't start until probably the Saturday before or after Thanksgiving. But this year, I know I'm wrong. I have already started listening to Christmas music. So I'm already in a crafty feeling. So,
and you have to remember, in the magazine world, I mean, all of our Christmas issues are on sale already. So we've been working on them since summer. So now we're full of inspiration and ideas, so we're all ready to start crafting now.
And I think for me, sometimes we live in the Midwest where we do experience a change of the seasons. And sometimes for me, it's based on when it starts to get cold, because mm-hmm. that's when I want to nest and be inside and spend more time with, whether it's knitting or quilting or whatever the craft of choice might be at that time. So sometimes for me, it depends on when it starts getting cold. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, it's coming up on the holidays. I better start working on some things. So if we have a delayed start to winter, sometimes I don't get as started as soon as I should. We've had a beautiful fall here in the Midwest, So I haven't really started thinking about it too much.
Well, but we've had some cold days, actually, and those are the ones that just, like, cold, rainy days, and those make me want to get out knitting things. And I'm not a huge knitter, but also one thing I've decided this year, okay, maybe everyone isn't going to get it, maybe I'll just get one, but we have an arm-knitted scarf in the fall winter issue of Make It Yourself magazine, which we also do, and that's on newsstands now. So arm knitting is this big craze of, like, literally using your arms as the knitting needles or the crochet hook kind of thing. I'm like, what? But they're like giant stitches, and you can make a scarf in like half an hour,
half hour or so.
But they look awesome, so I'm totally making at least myself one of those. So.
The only thing you have to remember with arm knitting is once you start, you need to have a dedicated half hour or so. You're committed to it.
No bathroom
really
break.
No, you can't really take it off and put it back on. So just kind of keep that in mind as you start your project.
But yeah, that Make It Yourself issue, the fall winter issue, is on newsstands now too. So if you pick that up, there's so many great gift ideas and definitely the instructor. There's step-by-step photos for how to arm knit in case you've never done it before.
And there is a photograph of that on the cover, and then as well, really cute potholders that Amy Sinibaldi has done that I think of the gingerbread house that a lot of us are inspired to make this holiday season as well.
Yes. Yep. So thanks for being here and talking holidays with us, and we'll be back later in the show talking storage and a preview at the February 2015 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, rotary cut several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Hi, and welcome back to the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. I'm Editor Lindsay, and I'm here with Senior Editor Elizabeth Beasy. And we're going to be talking about a new feature in all of our American Patchwork and Quilting 2015 issues called Piece and Play.
Yes, I'm very excited about this new series of articles. And we're going to have one article in every issue of American Patchwork and Quilting throughout 2015. And kind of to introduce this, I'm just going to step back and kind of read something that I wrote for the magazine in the December issue. So we are introducing a new year-long series with quilt designer, shop owner, and author Jean Wells. Each of Jean's Piece and Play articles will include a technique lesson, a color tip, and a small project designed so you can try the technique. So whether you're a structured quilter looking to develop more freedom, a budding innovator wanting to learn more about color and design, or a conventional traditionalist who prefers to follow a pattern, we encourage you to give it a try. So where we started this whole kind of idea was with Jean Wells. And for those of you that don't know Jean, I guess I'm going to talk a little bit about Jean.
Yes,
because that's actually what we started by profiling Jean again in the December issue of American Patchwork and Quilting, which is on sale right now. So Jean Wells has been sewing her whole life. And she, many of you know her as the lady behind Stitch and Post, the Stitch and Post in Sisters, Oregon, and the Sisters Outdoor Quilting Show, mm-hmm. which she's been doing for years and years. But Jean is, I think, such a wonderful example of what many quilters are and where they kind of are in their journey. So
right.
I kind of think about it like, maybe this is a silly illustration, but I kind of think of it like maybe fashion. So I know quilting isn't just a fashionable fad kind of thing, and that's not how most of our most of our readers think of it, and I don't either. It's my lifestyle. But I do change what I like in my home. I change
right.
what I like to wear throughout the years. So why wouldn't my quilting style and likes and dislikes change?
Of course.
And so by talking about this quilting journey that Jean Wells has been on since she started quilting in 1969 until now, we're not talking about there's a right way and a wrong way and wherever you are in this journey, that it's a bad thing. It's just interesting to look and see where she's been, where she's come, where she is now, and how we can all learn some things from her.
Right.
So, one of the things I think is interesting is that, so again, this timeline of Jean's is in the December issue, but there are some great pictures in there, and I know a lot of you will identify with some of these. It comes all the way from string piecing, her first garments that she did for Good Housekeeping mm-hmm. back in the early 80s, some lovely vests and things, and then up to, then she moved on to kind of memory quilting, well, not really memory quilting, but with lace and velvets and things
right.
like that. And then in the 90s, she did a whole lot of stuff with sampler quilts. Or that was the early 90s. And mm-hmm. that's kind of where I came in. I started quilting in the late 80s, early 90s, and kind of a traditional look. And that is actually still mainly where my comfort zone is.
Right.
But I have branched out, doing some of the other things. So after this traditional kind of quilt block look, Jean went to some of the North Woodsy look,
mm-hmm.
As well as starting fusible applique
right.
when that started coming around, and then some beautiful things inspired by her garden.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of all in that whole genre.
Right.
And then where Jean went next is improvisational piecing, I'm going to say. So she took on quilting as more of an art form.
Right.
I mean, by this time, she'd been quilting for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, just, again, it was a progression that she kind of took. And she wrote a couple of books about her
right.
progression, or about actually where she is now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what inspired us to start this series. So the books are in Intuitive Color and Design and Inspired Art Quilting. And they're both by Jean Wells for C&T. And these are kind of what we're basing the lessons on as we go through the year. And I just encourage everyone to, again, even if you're not an art quilter, and I totally don't consider myself an art quilter, but I am intrigued by some of these ideas that she has, both the techniques, which we're calling this article Piece and Play.
Right.
So learning a new piecing technique, usually they are innovative piecing, intuitive piecing. And then the play part is learning to look at color in a whole new way. So that's one of the things I really appreciate about Jean is that she, when she's in class or in her book, she just kind of throws out these tips, you know, random, not random, but so helpful. And it's like she knows them right and left until she just like, you know, kind of spouts off, you know, says these tips. And you're just like, wait a minute, that was a wonderful insight. And I got to write that down. So we've written these down for you. And we've put them into the article.
Which is perfect. And I find myself, I mean, I just started quilting a few years ago, and I thought for sure I would be a modern quilter and I would be more of this intuitive sewing. And I found myself after trying one quilt that way that I'm a much more traditional quilter in terms of both patterns and color choices. Like brown and blues are really my favorite colors to use in quilts. So really, I am very intrigued by her journey, and just I'm planning on doing these little piece and play, the color lessons and the technique lessons, just to kind of expand my quilting. I mean, they're not big projects. I'm not investing all this time to make a huge quilt, although you definitely could if you loved it. But just little lessons and just learning these little tricks to just try new things and expand myself that way. And even if I don't like it, I'm learning something new, and maybe like Jean, 10 years from now, I'll find myself doing more of that, and I'll already have that under my belt.
Or even incorporating these into your traditional
quilts. That would be fun.
That'd be something even completely different than what Jean does. So I guess maybe we should actually talk about what these lessons and projects actually are.
Yes.
So we just sent the February issue of American Patchwork and Quilting to the printer last Friday.
Yay.
So yeah, yay. So that goes on sale in early December, and so that's where you'll find the first article of the Piece and Play series.
Right.
And
but there's some things that our readers can do to get ready. I mean, it's a month away, but there's some things that readers can do in terms of choosing their fabric and getting that stuff ready. So by the time they get their hands on our February issue, they're ready to try these techniques. So
exactly.
Jean has really great tips on how she chose her initial fabrics for this project.
Exactly. So so Jean talks about making a palette box, and that we kind of went into that a little bit in the December issue at the end of her profile, and then we talk about it more in the February issue. So it's really just so that you don't also have to worry about fabric choice while you're trying a new technique. Just get yourself ready for the year and make a box of fabrics that that has enough different colors in it that maybe you won't get sick of it for the year, because you'll be working with this throughout the year.
But, or you just have options.
Exactly, yeah. So so what Jean did was actually start with a print, a super multicolored print, actually, that her daughter, Val Wells, designed from the Quill Collection. And then she picked a lot of solids to go with it. And what one of the, again, interesting color tips that Jean just says is, you know, I'm not looking to match the colors exactly. I'm just using it as a starting point for selecting my colors. And then she pushes the palette, as she calls it, and just selecting things that are duller or brighter. So it just gives your quilt or your little pieces of your little practice pieces that you'll be doing just that extra little something that you didn't
the
really
sparkle.
Know why. Yeah, the sparkle. So
and I think that's one of her great tips. I mean, she talks about it in the February issue in terms of oranges. She chose a bright orange initially, and it just stood out too much. So she added some duller oranges, and it was more cohesive, and it really helped both colors stand out more.
Yeah.
So it's not always the brightest color you can find to make it pop. It's
exactly
how they play with each other.
Yeah, and she also, I mean, she has even also a lime green in there.
Yeah.
But he might stand out unless he had, there's also this olive green that she's got in there. You don't have to work in solids for your palette box. It's just, again, as Jean says, it's easier to learn a new technique when you are using solid. So you don't have to think about, oh, I really want to use this print, I want to use that print, and sometimes it's not good for what you're actually making or the composition.
Right.
You just feel like you have to use it.
Right.
But, I like solids, but I don't have tons of them. So actually what I'm going to do, and she also recommends this too, it's like, you know, looking for all of the blenders and basics and
right.
things, because I have a boatload of basics. So that's probably what I'm going to do, is pull just those tone on tones, maybe not things that are completely solid looking when you're from far away, but, they have a little sparkle in
right.
them, I guess. So, that's kind of what I'm looking at doing.
And those, I mean, the tone on tones and the blenders are easy to match with each other. I mean, it's not such standout prints that you'll have trouble choosing your fabrics in the first place.
Exactly.
You can concentrate more on the technique while you're playing with your fabrics.
Yep.
And I'm doing the same thing. I'm doing tone on tone, like blues and creams and just scrappy, choosing from my stash. And
I still don't know what colors I'm going to do.
I mean, I say blues and creams now, but
when you actually pick
when
them,
I start picking.
Maybe, yeah. So the first lesson, which, sorry, I keep getting sidetracked talking about all this different stuff. But the first lesson that Jean's going to teach us in February is freehand curved piecing. And again, this is something that I could see myself incorporating into traditional design,
yes.
as well as the intuitive piecing that Jean calls
mm-hmm.
it. So it's not wildly curvy seams, but it is just gentle curves that you rotary cut.
Right, and without a ruler.
Exactly. No ruler, no templates, nothing like that. So Jean starts with strips of fabric and then just gently kind of rotary cuts a gentle curve. I just
right.
keep saying gentle. And then put them together, and you don't have to pin them. You don't have to do anything crazy. We show
right.
you with a couple step-by-step. Yeah, machine or sewing on the sewing machine. You really are just, when you're sewing these pieces together, you're just kind of placing the top strip onto the bottom strip and
mm-hmm.
just rearranging it. It's all about not stretching
right.
these pieces as you sew them together.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm not explaining this fabulously, but...
But there's great step-by-step pictures.
Yeah. So, and actually, in my mind, so I know I said that these are, like, gentle freehand curves, but I know you can do them with more extreme curves.
Right.
So I am already planning to when I'm good at these gentle curves, in that I want to do some more extreme curves and, like...
Yeah.
Curves that go completely opposite ways, so
mm-hmm.
then it might look like I'm... insetting some small slivers
right.
into other curves. Yeah,
and really that's like the great thing about learning these techniques is you can make the project we're showing you just with the pattern we give you, but you're also learning a technique, so as you get more comfortable with it, you can play with it more and you can use it in your own projects. And
exactly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I also forgot to mention what the project is. So, the first project. So, as you're learning this technique, you're making like a little 7.5-inch square piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Jean made 4 of these units and put them together in a 4-patch and just put a little solid border around it, and it makes a really pretty pillow.
Yes, it does.
And then, if you don't want to do 4 units, you could just stop after that first unit, or... You don't have to stop after the first unit, but you could have something usable after the first unit, because for every technique we do this year, we are showing a pincushion that
yes.
Jean made from it. Because you can never have too many pincushions.
No, you can't.
I mean, my pincushions are never where... I don't think they're ever where I leave them, first of all, but...
And then it's just a great reminder of the lessons you learn. The color lesson, the technique
exactly.
lesson.
Yeah, so these are just cute little tufted pincushions that Jean made, and so... you can see those in the magazine, and then we'll have instructions for all those online as well. And I think one great thing that we're going to do as we go through the year is share all of these things that we've made.
Yes,
so,
because we love seeing what everyone's doing, and I think it just is that extra inspiration if you're kind of unsure. You can just, I mean, look at what other people are doing, what colors they're using, what they're making out of it, and we have a great way we set this up. So the whole year, we're going to be... following people online that are using the hashtag APQ Learn Along. So if you're using Instagram, you're using Facebook, you can take a picture of your project or tag, if you have questions about something, tag your questions with APQ Learn Along, and then we'll be pulling that stuff into our website. People can search for that stuff online, and they'll be able to answer any questions you have, get more inspiration, just see what everyone else is doing, which will be so fun. And we also have a section of our website set up for this. That's allpeoplequilt.com/learnalong. And we'll have helpful videos. We'll have some patterns up there. We'll have all of the Instagram posts people are doing, and just really a great place for you to share what you're learning and get great hints for doing this process with us all year.
Exactly. And I think it's going to be, I know many people on our staff are excited about trying
we
this.
We are, yeah.
And again, it's not a huge commitment. So we're like, oh, yeah, I can make a pincushion every other month. Yeah. So so several of us are going to be doing that, and you can see what we're doing on that page, allpeoplequilt.com.
Yep, and we'll be blogging, we'll be posting, there'll be a lot of interactive stuff. So we look forward to seeing what you guys are doing, and you can snoop on what we're doing.
And then also, the Stitch and Post staff is going to be, I don't know if every single one of them, but I know they are going to be doing these learn-along lessons with us. So we'll also have pictures of that, and then you can also go to their blog, stitchandpostsisters.typepad.com. Mm-hmm. So, but we'll have links to that on our website.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope you are excited about this. Oh, maybe not as much as I am, but I think once you see that first article, you're just going to get excited and just be willing to try something new. And even if you never use it again, I think some of the color lessons will stick with you.
Yeah, they're great.
And then just some of that technique. So I'm excited.
Well, yep. And look for this in our February issue, which is on sale December 2nd. We'll be back later.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. If you're working on more than one quilt project at a time and have limited storage space, stash each ongoing project in a large white gift box, label the ends, and stack the boxes in your closet.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. I'm host Lindsay Fullington, and I am here with Linda Augsburg, our editorial content chief. And today we're going to be talking about something most quilters have trouble with, and that is storage.
Absolutely.
And in our February 2015 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting, which will be on sale at the beginning of December, we have a big storage article, and we really tried to make it about real life storage. So we have Linda just moved into a new home, and that gave her a really great opportunity to kind of rebuild and reimagine her dream sewing space. And we did do a feature article on it, and you can see lots of beautiful pictures in that February issue. But she's going to talk a little bit about storage today with us.
Yes. Well, and it was fun to redo my room, but I also knew since I was renting, as I think, you know, most of us don't want to invest a ton of money
right.
in, well, Kimberly Einmo's article on, you know, her sewing dream sewing room where she put in cabinetry and all that was great. I think for a lot of us, you know, we want to make sure that the storage we add is practical and movable and changeable, because our needs might change. You know, you might have a guest room that you use that, you know, gosh, somebody ends up moving back home and it doesn't need to be a guest sewing room anymore. It needs to be a bedroom. So to have that versatility is really important.
Right. So talk about kind of the space you just moved into.
Well, I lucked out. I ended up with a walkout basement, finished basement in the place I rented. And so I really had a great room to work with a ton of space. But I really wanted to make sure I had the ability to make that work best for me. And so I did some things differently than I've done in the past. And I really think it helped me in adding storage space to the room. Because it's a big room, so you don't want to have this large open area in the middle that you don't use.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I did, rather than typically when I put up my metal shelving units that hold my fabric, they're right along the walls. As I think a lot of us tend to put our furniture right along those walls. I turned them perpendicular and realized I have a lot more space. And again, making the best use of this large room
that
has this big
tip.
Open area.
Mm-hmm.
I also went and got, I had been using the clear plastic containers. And while I love that they're clear and plastic, they kind of looked mismatchy. And
yeah,
so,
not always the prettiest storage.
Yeah, I decided that this was the time, this was a great opportunity for me to invest in a little bit of storage. And I went a very inexpensive route. I went down to the IKEA and bought some scub containers that are just a zipper bottom so they collapse. So if I change my mind, I can use them for other things.
Yep, that's right.
But they're really flexible. And they come in different sizes and gave me a really nice uniform look.
Yeah, and you just chose plain white, which matches with everything.
Exactly. And different sizes and shapes really allowed me to have that ability to play with what's going to be in which container. Because, when I decided I was going to kind of reorganize this space and rethink it, I actually put out on Facebook, how do you organize your fabric? And I think there are as many ways of organizing fabric as there are people trying to do it.
I'm sure. And you have to make it work for you. So however you search for fabric is how you need to organize it.
Exactly. And so what I did, I have one of the storage units has tags on it of, if they're bought for a specific project, this is for this quilt, or this is projects that I've picked out to go together, and they're in Ziploc bags, and they work great for when I need to grab a quick project and I'm ready to start.
Right.
Then on the other rack, I have my fabric by color so that I can pull in when I need I need greens, pull the greens out. And I marked those with a little ribbon that I had
around. Is so cute. And storage doesn't have to be ugly. And just adding a little colored ribbon, which is not only functional, it tells you what color is inside, but it's also just cute. And you can pick up cute ribbon.
Yeah.
Reason to go shopping.
Another reason to go shopping. I also noticed that I needed space to store my extra sewing machines when I wasn't using them. And I didn't want to have four cabinets in the room because make sense for me. But I found these, again, kind of mix and match storage cubes that in different sizes, easy to put together, and I could build almost a surround for my cabinet.
Yeah, that's perfect.
That really, really was very functional for me, and I could keep things together and use that space better. And it gave me a larger space as my sewing surface, which was nice as well.
Yes.
What other things?
Talk about how you store bigger quilts that you have pieced already.
Well, unfortunately, as I was, like I said, going through and kind of reorganizing everything, I noticed that I do have a lot of quilt tops that need to be quilted.
A lot of us do.
I've recently gotten myself a long arm, and so I really wanted to have some things I could practice on. So here and there, as I was around, I'd pick up a quilt top thinking, well, I can quilt that later, and it'll be a good practice piece, and I'm not so invested in it because I didn't piece it. So I do have a lot of those ready. So I hung them, actually, the nice part under the stair closet in the room that I'm sewing in, allowed me to have a hanging rack. So I just put them on pant hangers, and when I had the backing, I hung that with it. When I had the binding cut, I hung that with it. So there
I
had
perfect.
Everything I needed. So when I'm ready to put something on that long arm, I can just grab the next project in the closet and get going.
And it's an easy way to keep your backing and binding organized with the quilt, too.
Yes. I found that as I was going through and unpacking other boxes, that's right. You bought that to go with this. So now, as I put quilts into that closet and hopefully take quilts out of that closet and quilt them, I'll have everything together and more organized.
Right. So hangers is another way to organize things. And it's not something you would find in the storage aisle necessarily. But is there any other things that you use that maybe are unconventional storage?
I did. I also found a super cute rail system that is originally intended for kitchen. And it's got hooks and there's also little buckets. And so I'm going to mix and match those things together as my needs you know, progress.
Yeah.
And well, you can see we in the issue we showed it hanging the cutters, my rotary cutters and my scissors on it. But I think, you know, there may be a shelf that has that, and then there may be another rack that has little buckets on it to hold other tools so that I've got them right there at the ready. And, again, they were in the kitchen area.
Right.
So I really shop everywhere I think I can find something that's going to help my situation. And to that end, I had had I'd made a pressing surface a while ago that sat on the top of two cabinets. And I found the cabinets, as I used them, were really not functional for my needs.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved having that massive pressing surface.
Yeah.
Especially when I was doing things like T-shirt quilts where I needed to lay something out and be able to really work on a large
right.
surface. So I brought the pressing surface with me, and I found that you can buy retractable legs, like table legs.
Oh, wow.
So I'm able to have that pressing surface up when I need it. But when I just need an ironing board, I can just tuck it away against the wall and it won't be in my way because it's a pretty big table
mm-hmm.
to take up space in your room.
Right.
And so having some of those, like I said, the hardware store kind of stuff is really helpful. And I love walking the aisles of a hardware store anyway to see what I can find and
right.
what I can make work. So that was fun. And I even used some wood pieces from the hardware store to make my sewing table a little higher so that I could make that one surface on my sewing cabinets really work well for me as
That's a great idea. And I mean, quilters find inspiration for quilts everywhere, but you never think of finding storage inspiration anywhere
exactly.
you go. But it's good to identify kind of what you're looking for and what your needs are, and then you can figure out where to find those pieces.
Right. And that is one of the tips. Like pegboard, for instance, I have several sizes of pegboard. I originally was using it as a jewelry rack. And then I thought, well, you know, really I could use it as a ruler rack. And so I have several different sizes framed out for my needs. So it depends on which room I use it in. But
right.
I do find that even that, you know, classic pegboard, again, from the hardware store
uh-huh.
that men have in their wood shops and their garages can be helpful to us as well. And there's all those cute little containers that hook on.
Oh, of course.
You know, there's little jars for your buttons and things like that. You can really make that a cute board as well as a functional board.
Yep. And you can even paint it to match your decor.
Exactly.
I mean, it doesn't have to be ugly.
Right. Oh, yeah. And paint the frame. Just trim it out with a little wood framing and
yeah.
you're done. And the one thing I will note on that is if you're going to use pegboard, make sure you put something behind it, wood slats or something, so that when you put those pegs in, you're not hitting the wall.
Right.
So mine has a deep frame on the back that helps it from being able to be makes it more usable.
Yeah, of course.
So
now that we're talking pretty, how did you make your sewing space prettier?
Well, you know, that's hard. I do, you know, the flannel wall, though very plain, once you've got a quilt up there, that's always adding
right,
pretty
that helps.
To the room. I had some framed prints that were more dress, more garment oriented,
mm-hmm.
and some of those on the wall really help. I have some mannequins, some dress forms that I've redone. I've got one, you'll see one in the magazine that I did with, I decoupaged the body and then did big dimensional flowers
it's
on
really
it.
Cute.
She's a lot of fun, and if you'd have seen her earlier, she came from a roadside pickup one day. Somebody brought her to me and said, we saw this on the side of the road and thought of you. And I thought, she's pretty dingy and rusty. That's really not a compliment. But I stripped her down and decoupaged her. She turned out really cute. And so that kind of thing. For me, I grew up as a garment sewer as well.
Yeah.
So I like having some of those touches in there.
Oh, I love it.
You know, as something as simple as organizing your thread rack by color can really bring a pop
yeah.
of color to your room, too. I've got a large thread rack that, you know, just that's a fun burst of color in that room.
It and is, and I mean, people don't think of using their thread or their fabrics as decor items, but it's so colorful and pretty anyways that it really is an easy way to update your space.
It absolutely is. I'm less of a shelf and jar person, though I think those studios are amazingly beautiful.
Yeah.
I just, for me, I'm so much more functional and I'm not using that kind of stuff as much.
Right.
I haven't yet prettied up the room too far. But of course, hanging quilt projects in the room always adds
a
great pop of color.
Yes, it does.
And I'm lucky enough to, like I said, to have those windows. So I actually look out onto a little creek in the back that has trees along it. So it's a nice, I have a lot
really
of light
nice.
In the room,
Perfect.
Which helps a lot. But there's always, you know, colorful accessories, colorful tools, and things like that that really make a difference in your sewing space. Make it work for you and make yourself happy in there. That's all that matters.
That is all that matters. Well, we'll be back in our next segment after this commercial with another editor talking more about storage.
Great.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once fabric pieces have been pressed, let them cool in place before moving them. It prevents distortion of bias edges.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Hi, and welcome back to the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast Show. I'm Lindsay, and I'm here with editor Jill Mead, and we're still talking storage. So make sure you pick up our February issue of American Patchwork and Quilting, which is on sale at the beginning of December. And you can see Jill's beautiful sewing space, and she's here to talk a little bit more about it today. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Lindsay.
So tell us a little bit about what your space looks like and how big it is.
My space is luxurious. It is big. I am lucky. It's all white. I like to have as much light as possible. So
yes.
All the furnishings are white. The floor covering is light colored. But I can still see pins when I drop them on the floor.
Yeah, which is a great tip. And white is just a very classic color, and it never goes out of style.
Can change the accents as you proceed through your projects.
Right, and you can always find white storage.
You can.
So if you ever need to replace anything.
Yes, or add to
or
it.
Add, yeah, if your stash gets too big. So talk a little bit more about the kind of shelving and storage items you have.
I have some open storage, some closed storage. The open storage, I have baskets, which are organized. Maybe all my glues and things, adhesives are in
the ugly stuff.
The ugly stuff is in one basket and labeled with little tags. Open storage for the pretty things like some of my yarn and some of my threads. But basically, yeah. I like to keep things hidden. So fabric is in plastic tubs sorted by color and polka dots and stripes.
If you don't know, Jill loves polka dots, so she definitely needs her own bin of polka dot fabric.
Yeah, they do need their own. So they're all behind closed doors.
And what's the reason for that?
Reason for that is they won't be damaged by sunlight, and if there were to be any house dust, they wouldn't get on the fabrics. Not that I have any dust in my house.
No, I don't think you do. But and the clear storage just makes it easy to see when you open your closet that what you can see inside of that.
It does. Mm-hmm. This morning I was looking for all purple batiks, and there they were. Didn't take any time at all to find them.
Perfect. And so you have you do a lot of other crafting besides just quilting. So do you have any special tips for storing your yarn or...
Well, I like to have my yarn look beautiful on the shelves. So all the reds and purples are in one niche.
Oh, yeah.
And all the blues and greens in another niche. They, too, are affected by sunlight and
right.
dust.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to keep them out of direct sunlight.
Yeah, that's a good tip. And you also have, and I love that you have this in your storage space, and it's so clever, you have a baker's rack.
I do.
And where would you even find a baker's rack?
Well, you find baker's racks at restaurant supply stores, which are very sun stores anyway. You get sidetracked, find all kinds of things you need or don't need.
I bet you do.
But this tall baker's rack has sliding trays, which are actually baker's trays.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see the magazine, you'll see I have a lot of unfinished projects, and they are...
Which we all do.
We do. And each one is on its own tray so that when I have time, I can whip out the tray. Everything I need for that project is on that one tray ready
to go.
Which
is so handy. So do you have any, I mean, so that's an unconventional storage item. I would have never thought to use that in my storage space. Do you have any other items you may have picked up that are not necessarily storage items that you use for that purpose?
The top of one little storage unit, and this is not featured in the magazine, but my son added a top to it that I covered as an ironing surface.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's right near my sewing machine, so and it's a nice height for me, mm-hmm. so I can just press things as I go.
Yep, that's perfect. And you use a salad bowl for something, too.
I do. All those little things that accumulate by the sewing machine, the ripper, my best friend, a little duster, thread clippers, measuring devices, I keep all in a salad bowl right there.
Which is perfect.
They don't fall off the working surface when I'm sewing, and they're always there when I need them.
Yep, and it's really easy to just grab it right out of the bowl when you need it.
It is.
So your surface is very clean.
Yes.
Do you, how do you keep it clean? Do you clean it every day or after every project? Or is it just clean for the magazine?
Well, it's clean for the magazine. I will admit I get a little extra tidying up. When the work surfaces are clear, it's much more inviting to go sew for a little while. If they're stacked, I have a tendency to not want to go in there because it's just too busy, too much going on, too chaotic.
And so you get overwhelmed.
You do get overwhelmed.
It's too many things you want to work on all at once, so you don't get anything done.
Yes.
And where do you keep your projects that are in progress? I know we talked about the baker's rack, which is great for smaller things.
It is. Larger things are in big open baskets.
Mm-hmm.
So a quilt top maybe will be folded up and it be in the basket with everything else I need to finish.
Yep. And you have a TV and a lounge chair in your sewing space.
I do.
Do you watch TV while you sew?
Occasionally, or I have music on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just nice to know there's a comfortable place to sit if you're going to be doing handwork or
yes.
knitting something quiet.
That's perfect. And it's all in one area, so you don't have to go very far. If you're moving from, you know, quilting a quilt top to doing binding, you just have to move to your chair, turn the TV on.
Ready to go.
You're ready to go. So what other tips do you have for storing fabric?
Storing fabric, I don't spend a lot of time folding it up.
Mm-hmm.
It does take less space when it's folded, but I don't fold them all to the same size or shape. But I do fold and stack. Little bitty pieces, I find it really hard to throw away because you never know we're going to need that. And they go, they're color sorted, and they go into photo boxes.
Oh, that's clever.
So, and they're marked with pink, red, etc.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I just throw my little pieces away. I know most quilters hearing this are probably gasping right now, but my sewing space doesn't have room for tons of fabric storage, so.
Well, when you have your favorite fabric and I may never find this one again, it's good to the last crap.
So, do you expand your sewing space? I mean, have you expanded it in the last couple of years? Do you need to buy new storage items, or do you just kind of get clean out when you need to?
The most recent acquisition were three chests. Each has three drawers and they're lined up all together, so they make a nice work surface on the top that's a little bit lower than my stand-up
right.
surface. And I keep my cutting machine on
mm-hmm.
that, and then in one of the bottom drawers I keep all my dies. Otherwise, in those drawers, I compartmentalize with little containers from the dollar store.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I can have pins in one, sewing machine needles in one, hand needles in another, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to find exactly what I need to sew with.
That's good. And I mean, I think a lot of quilters are always on the lookout for storage, and it's hard to not just keep buying both quilting supplies and storage products.
Yes.
So if you can make things do double duty, like making something a cutting surface as well as storage, that just helps with both space and functionality.
It does. And I have a number of glass jars also. that I use for storage of threads.
Oh, pretty.
And they look beautiful and functional, too.
Yeah, that's right. So any other tips for decorating your storage space?
Oh, I have some wonderful things. My father made me a great big pair of redwood hand-carved scissors that I
beautiful.
Have on my wall. And they're right next to my design wall. And I keep things on the design wall that inspire me, maybe for the next project, or maybe a project
that's
in my dreams.
That's right. So talk more about your design wall. How big is it?
It's about 3 by 4 feet. Not huge, but large enough so that I can put up at least part of a project. Yeah.
Perfect. And is it just a flannel wall?
It is just a flannel wall. And
make it easy.
Wrapped it around heavy-duty builder's foam and just taped it in place on the back and hammered the nails right into the wall. It's not a professional job, but it works.
But it works. That's right. And so do you switch? I mean, do you showcase your finished quilts in your room at all?
Most of my finished quilts have been gifts, so they're not there. I do have a few quilts that are favorites of mine that I made for myself, and they are in the room.
Good. That's always great inspiration, too. So, Jill, how do you store books or patterns?
My books I keep on bookshelves. Again, white bookshelves, so they're easy to clean, easy to take
care
of. I have two main bookshelves. One of them is just for quilting books, and the other one is for the other types of crafts that I enjoy. But I store them by color, which may sound a little bit strange. They look beautiful on the shelves, but you store them by color.
Right.
And I happen to remember books by the color of the cover.
This is very funny, Jill, because I actually have white bookshelves, and I store all of my books by cover or by color, too, because I remember what color the book is over the author or any of that. So, and then I keep all of my white or tan books in a covered shelf because those aren't as pretty.
Good idea.
Yeah. So you have two machines displayed in your room right now, but I'm assuming you have more than just those.
I do have a few more machines, and everyone is my favorite. It's like having a favorite child. Every child is your favorite. The ones that are not currently being used are stored on a lower shelf of a major bookcase. And that one, like I say, they're all, each is covered either with the cover that came with the machine or with a dust cover so that they'll be in good working order when I bring them out.
Perfect. And you don't have to touch them or clean them when, when you need to use them.
That's right. They're ready to sew.
Right. So tell more about how you keep your sewing space clean or picked up.
Well, the thing that makes it the easiest for me is to remember to put things away after I use them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a constant struggle. I have a whiteboard in there that I use for design ideas. And on my whiteboard, I constantly am writing, put it away. And that's
a
reminder
perfect
to
tip.
Me.
And put it away where it belongs so you remember where you put it.
Exactly. If things are labeled where they go, it makes it easy for me to put them back.
Yep, that's perfect.
The other thing that I often do is keep things where we need them.
Right.
The ironing surface, a pressing surface that I described earlier, has drawers below. And everything I need for pressing, a seam roll, spray starch, lint removers are all in those drawers, so I don't have to stop and hunt for everything I need.
That's a great tip. Yep, and you don't need to be walking across the room to grab something you only need for a second.
Yes.
Well, perfect. Thanks so much for sharing about your quilting space with us, Jill.
My pleasure.
Okay, be back next week with the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast and host Pat Sloan, and you'll hear her talk to more of our designer friends. Thanks. Have a great week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.